to all of our two and four-legged listeners. Welcome back to What the Bark. I'm Nathan from Rightpaw, and joining me as always is everyone's favorite geneticist, Genetic George. How are you, George?
And good, buddy. Good and well, thank you. The greatest genetic. I'm sort of everywhere I go, I get this GG and Genetic George. I'm trying to brand that.
It's become your personal brand. Claire from last week's podcast, she loved it, Dr. Claire.
Did she?
Yeah.
Claire was great.
She was a great guest. I really enjoyed that episode. I thought she gave some great tips.
Yeah, it did get a giggle, GG. But today we've got a really good topic.
I'm fascinated by this. I think Orovit's done something really cool here to, you know, get into some real insights about dog owners across Australia. But yeah, I think we're going to, you know, debunk some myths and you know, fact find across different things. But yeah, George, tell us about this report that Orovit has developed.
It's Dogs in the Digital Age. So yes, Nathan, this is a report that we commissioned with YouGov in September of last year. So the 5th of the 9th, we went out, YouGov sampled 1,001 dog owners over the age of 18 years and older in Australia.
Yeah, it's a really good sample size.
Really good. So we went there, they chatted to them, and we got some really good answers to questions on pets in Australia, more about dogs. So, yeah. You know, for example, we know that there's more than, you know, 8 million adults in Australia, and 41% have a dog. 41% of the Australian population has a dog.
It's amazing. I think Australia is one of the most, you know, like pet obsessed countries in the world. You know, if you look at the number of people that have a number of households that have pets, whether it's a dog or a cat, I think Australia is up there with the highest in the world. So we really love our pets.
So 8 million, 41% owned a dog. And of course, not to forget our other furry friends, the cats were 37%. Or 6 million of the population.
Yeah, amazing. And I think what's really cool for all of our listeners that maybe like their stats and, you know, a bit nerdy like me, I think what I thought was really cool about this was you've got 1,000 owners that you surveyed, pet owners, but YouGov did a really good job. They've weighted that across age, gender, region. So it's a really representative view of pet owners across the whole of Australia. So it's really well done.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons we chose YouGov, because we wanted a survey that reflected all the population. So you're right, very important point that it was weighted. So it was age, region. For example, did you know that which state, if you had to guess which state has the most dogs compared to other states? Have a guess.
Oh, that's a good question. I reckon it's got, you know, you'd think... Is it, you know, where there's more bigger property, you know, more space so that you can, you know, the dogs can roam around? Well, I don't know. But I mean, also, you know, you got urban cities, so there's a lot more people there. I mean, I reckon maybe Queensland, just because I know at Rightpaw, most of our breeders are actually in Queensland. But that'd just be a guess.
I would have said the same thing, but surprisingly, 53% of Aussies in South Australia are more likely to have a dog, 48% Queensland, 47% WA. So your theme about size and property, and then 37 New South Wales and 36 Victoria.
There you go. So those more, maybe the more, you know, urban states, yes, you know, New South Wales, Victoria, yeah.
And just on age groups, which, are, you know, maybe for the listeners, can you define what your age group? You got a Gen X. What age is a Gen X?
Oh, gosh. All right. Now you're testing me. I think Gen X is you're born in the sort of 70s to 80s. It's that sort of time frame, maybe like 70s to early to mid 80s, something like that.
What about millennials?
Millennials, well, that's me. I know that one. That's sort of your 90s, you know. 90s babies, like late 80s to sort of mid 90s, I think you're around that age.
And then there's Gen Z.
Gen Z. And that's people a bit younger than us, which is, you're sort of mid-90s and like to late 90s, and then even God forbid the 2000s.
That's right. So the people like the Gen Xers and the millennials, that 45% of them are more likely to own a dog. And then the baby boomers sit at 35%.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess maybe they're a bit older, maybe they had a dog and don't have a dog anymore.
So interesting. And this is going to either excite some people or go, again, more than half or 54% of oodle owners are part of the survey, compared to 35% who were purebred owners and 33% who were other types of dogs and crosses. Interesting, isn't it? Those oodle people.
Yeah, they're becoming more and more popular. And I think what we were saying was, yeah, also those oodle owners are very likely to have, other dogs. Like they might even have a cat. I think it was, yeah. So I think definitely those oodle owners, they love their pets and have multiple pets as well.
Interesting, because I'm going to talk more about the oodle breed. So dog owners who live in capital cities are more likely to have a oodle compared to those living elsewhere.
Very interesting. Yeah, I guess that also makes sense. I guess, you wander the streets of the eastern suburbs of Sydney or, maybe some of the, Toorak in Melbourne. And you'd probably see a fair few designer dogs and oodles around. So capital cities, it makes sense.
And dog owners with children under 18 at home are more likely to have a designer oodle breed. Interesting. 23% compared to 12% amongst those with no children under 18 at home. Great, because they're a great family kid dog, aren't they? The oodle. Easy for most people to not to. But here's a good one for all our traditional breeders listening out there. Those with high household incomes, 150K plus, are more likely to have purebred dogs.
That is very interesting. I think, again, that you can sort of see that makes sense. Some purebred dogs tend to be a bit more expensive because they, are more health. There's more health testing. Those breeders are, potentially doing a bit more health testing as well. So, yeah, that's interesting. God, we're really building a profile of different owners here.
So I'm going to ask you a question. So the survey also asked them, where did you get your dog from? So here are three categories for you, Nathan. You've got a breeder, you've got a friend or family member, or a rescue or council pound. Where do you think the highest percentage was from? So you've got a breeder, a friend or a family member, or a rescue or a pound.
Oh, it's, we didn't mention right paw. No, I'm joking. That'd be in the breeder category. You know what? I do know a little bit about this because even at right paw, when we were looking into this, we sort of looked at where people get their pets from, and yeah, I think breeder and sadly sometimes still pet shops, but breeder is definitely the number one. People, when they think of getting a new dog, they think breeder.
So the survey found that 39% were from a breeder, and I was quite surprised that 23% were from a family or friend member, and then 17% were from a rescue, which doesn't surprise me, because sometimes if you don't get some, most family and friends do know someone who has a dog, and you usually get it from there. Most of mine have come from breeders. So interesting, 39% of the 1,000 that was surveyed was an actual breeder. It would be nice to know what type of breeder, whether they're the different groups, but that came out of the survey.
Yeah, I think that's yeah, that's makes a lot of sense, and I think that has shifted over time because I, remember again from some of my research that maybe some of those older, Gen Xers and baby boomers, a lot of them said that they, when they were getting a dog, whether, earlier in life, they would get it from a friend or, they might know someone who knew someone who had a litter of pups, and it was not as organized or, through responsible channels as it is now. So I think that really has shifted, and the number of people getting a dog from a breeder has massively increased in the last sort of 10, 20 years.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I like to talk about household incomes again. And another interesting fact that came out of the survey was those with a higher household income of 150,000 K or more are the most likely to have sourced their dog from a breeder, 61%.
Wow.
those with a high sourced them from a breeder, while those on incomes of 100 to 149,000 are twice as likely to have gotten their dog from a pet store, 21%.
Yeah, that's, again, very interesting, because I think, again, like, you know, what does that mean? The way I look at that is, I think, you know, if you're, again, getting a dog from a breeder, you're getting a dog from, you know, someone who's, again, reputable, done all the health testing, is responsible. If you're going to a pet store, like, the trouble with pet stores, and that's the reason why they're outlawed in Victoria and Western Australia. I mean, you can't actually, they don't sell pets in pet shops in those states anymore. And it's because they're often cheaper. And the reason they're cheaper is because a lot of the pet shops can't guarantee where those dogs have come from, or the, you know, the places where they source the pups from. There have been cases where they have been not very, you know, great facilities.
It is getting harder and harder to get any pet from a pet store. It's not advisable. It, you know, it was interesting out of the study, which I almost laughed at, and you know, this is where you blame the children. Dog owners with children under the age of 18 were twice as more likely to have purchased from a pet store because of that. You know,
it's the impulse purchase, and that's the thing. I mean, that's why I struggle with pet shops, because it's encouraging an impulse purchase. Whereas you got to think about these lifetime commitments that you're getting into. It's a, you know, it's a lifetime companion. But I can see, yeah, why a child under 18, you walk past the pet shop and, you know, it's, you know, mum and dad, you know, probably get a bit swayed.
Yeah, so another part of the survey found that the people that do purchase purebred dogs, close to 60% got them from a breeder, compared to 38% for designer oodles and 18% from other crossbreeds. So again, breeder, traditional breeds, about 60%, with 38% being from designer oodles. Interesting. So
yeah, so it's building a really rich portrait of, you know, and even for breeders that are listening to this podcast, they're probably thinking to themselves, well, I breed this breed, so what does my typical owner look like? And this, you'd hope this maybe lines up with what they're seeing from the families that are coming to them every, you know, every year.
So then we asked them, YouGov also asked them some questions like, why did you choose this breed or type of dog over others? And what do you, and the most frequent responses came back, which was interesting, according to Australian dog owners that they surveyed, the number one reason for choosing a particular breed, type or dog was its size. 53% said size.
That's fascinating. It's sort of lifestyle as well. It's got to fit with your lifestyle. And, you know, if you've got young kids, then obviously size is important. If you're, you know, you're living in a smaller apartment, a house.
The second reason at 49% was temperament. 46% were looks. Geez, what's this sound like a Tinder?
Like a Tinder profile. Gosh.
Intelligence was 44%, and 40% was it's got to be good with kids.
Yeah.
Trainability was about 28%.
Look, that.
And then I literally love this part, and the reduced risk and health issues and strong genetics was 17%.
There you go, George. There's 17%. We've got to get that number up. Keep pushing how important it is.
I thought, which could be good for you, is they read about the breed online. So 18% were influenced by what they read online about the breed.
Very true. I think, you know, the thing that gives me, you know, a bit of, restores my faith in Australia is that temperament was more important than looks. And that for me, I'm like, they're, I've some faith in the Australian population.
So size and temperament were the two key factors, which is good. And, you know, trainability was also up there. So that's one of the reasons for choosing. So we've sort of given people this picture of what people look for and the different types of breeds and the percentages. Now let's talk some fun.
Right? Yeah.
Have some fun out of the survey, because YouGov also asked these people, what is your dog's favorite toy? You know, toys. And I thought, so good news is that 90% of the dog owners did say they have toys for their dogs.
That's good. I don't know what the other 10% are doing. they'll make their own toys.
What do you think is their favorite toy, Nathan? If you were a pet owner and what do you usually see when you're out and you see toys?
You go to the dog park, people are chasing, running after things. You'd assume it's some kind of frisbee or ball or something they're going to go and chase.
Ball was 27%.
Okay.
23% was a soft plush toy. And then third was a rope or a tug or a squeaky toy.
Yep. But
this is my favorite. 6% said their dog's favorite toy was their pet cat.
I can't believe 6% of people all thought the same thing.
Yeah, that's right.
God, that poor cat.
Importantly, for you people there on the right paw portal there, designer oodle owners are more likely to provide toys for their dog. 96% of oodle owners have a toy for their dog.
You can imagine it's about, giving them the best care and it's all, sometimes about looks and aesthetics. So yeah, I can see that. The thing I find funny whenever I think about toys is, and you hear this from so many breeders and owners, is that you can spend all the money in the world on a beautiful toy or something you think your dog's going to love. And then you get them a toilet roll and they're more interested in the toilet roll than they are in the toy that you spent, $50 on or whatever it is.
Yeah. So look, the next question we asked them was, do you ever cook a meal or food for your dog? So food, important, So what was scary is that almost 3/4, 73% of dog owners say they cook for their dog. Wow.
Wow. Personal, there's like a personal chef.
I don't get that at home.
You end up cooking for your dog more than you cook for yourself. That's interesting.
And the good thing was it's a similar proportion. So 74% of men and 72% of women said they cook for their...
Okay, that's good. They share the load.
Yeah, they share the load.
But yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, it is common, I would have assumed, that a dog might eat what the owners are eating. So if they had a bit of leftovers, you'll often see, not always endorsed, but you often see people give, a bit of chicken or whatever it is that they're eating. But to cook specifically for them, a home-cooked meal, that is shocking. I'm surprised by that.
And the dog owners living in New South Wales are more likely to cook for their dog compared to those in Victoria. Come on, Victoria, lift your game. 36% of those in New South Wales said they would cook compared to 28% in Victoria. And it's also the same true for living in capital cities, 38% compared to 26%. Interesting.
There you go. Well, hopefully all of those owners are, making sure that the dog's meals are balanced. And it's interesting because that's what Dr. Claire talked about last week. There are some, dog foods have to be complete and balanced and nutritious. And sometimes it's easier to do that with dog food than what you can cook at home. So yeah, you hope as well that the dogs are getting their full nutrients from that, even if it's a home cooked meal.
So we've gone through the sort of the pet parent, we've gone through some of the toys, we've gone through where they purchase and types of dogs. Our topic now.
Yeah, this is the George topic.
Which of the following health concerns do you have about your dog?
Interesting. Yeah, I think this for me, it gives you an insight into what owners are most worried about.
So the good news is that's, well, not good news, but 75% of dog owners did say they had health concerns about their dog's health.
Mm.
The most common was arthritis and joint problems, which was 25%. Mm-hmm. Interesting on the next one, which just came out under at 24%, was anxiety and nervousness.
That doesn't surprise me in the last couple of years. We all know and we've heard about the impacts of COVID and being at home and, your dog becoming reliant on everyone being at home. I think I read a statistic that said nearly 40% of the dogs that are currently in, people's homes were bought within the last 2 to 3 years during COVID, which is just staggering. So you'd think a lot of owners, yeah, are having to go back to work and live their life, and that sort of like anxiety and, you know, separation anxiety is becoming more common.
I mean, when I read these, there was arthritis and joint problems 25%, anxiety 24%, fleas and ticks 21%, bad decaying teeth or bad breath 19%, skin allergies and hair loss 19%. Are these the humans telling us about their health concerns or their dogs? It's almost like I'm reading something about myself.
Do you have fleas and ticks, George?
Well, nits. So skin allergies again at 19%, yes, teeth. And the other concerns that came out of were overweight, about 17%, ear infection, 16%, and cancer, 11%. And just to let people know that oodle or designer oodle owners are more likely to have health concerns about their dogs, 81%, compared to those who own a purebred dog. Whoa, yeah, shout out for the purebred. So, yeah, owners of oodles, 81% of them were concerned about health compared to 73% of purebred.
Very interesting.
Women, yeah, of course, I did in a survey, this, are more likely than men to be concerned about their dog's anxiety. 29% of women compared to 19% of men. But men are more likely to be concerned about real things like fleas and ticks. 25% of men said that was an issue compared to 17% of.
Yeah. Gosh, read into that what you will. I don't know what to make of that. But yeah, there you go. Maybe men are, you know, fleas and ticks, it's something I can do something about. You know, I'll give a tablet, I can do it.
Yeah. Us men, we don't have any emotional problems, anxiety and temper. We're blokes. We worry about real stuff like fleas and ticks.
Oh gosh.
It's interesting. So we're now going to talk about, where do you think most of these people source their health advice from for their dog? Because this was an interesting question. So you can see we asked some really good questions. We wanted to make sure we got value for money out of the money we paid for this.
Yeah. Good. These are all good questions. This is another question where I hope, you know, I hope Australia is going to do us proud and, you know, restore our faith in pet owners. You'd hope.
74%. Their local vet.
Oh, thank God for that. That's what you want to hear. That's great. That's what it should be.
By over 4 in 10, 44% referred to online sources such as Google, which was 30% of. And then I was surprised that some even went to WebMD for pets, 24%. And then 8% went to the Merck Veterinary Manual.
Wow.
They're going deep into the internet. I mean, it's good. I think as a human, you know, you go to Dr. Google, so it probably only makes sense you go there for your pets as well. But it's good to hear that the vet is still there, you know.
And, you know, Nathan, we are human. So sometimes when our dog's got a problem, I talk to my family and friends. So 22%, you know, got advice from their family and friends. Interestingly, 21% went to their local pet store. You know, when you go in there, say, oh, my dog's not eating, I'm doing this, the local pet store might advise. But what I did like was the 14% went to the breeder they purchased their dog from.
Yeah, that's great. That shows a responsible breeder, you know, wants to be involved in the life of the pet. So they're always a great source of advice.
And, you know, vets need to shout out to women, because women are more likely than men to get health advice, 80% compared to 69%.
Wow.
Whereas the men, we like to refer to the other sources, such as the breeder, you go back to the breeder, the Merck manual, the website, you know.
Interesting. Again, read into that what you will. That's very, yeah. But good on women for going to the vet. That's number one place to go.
Gen Z seem to rely a lot on the RSPCA for health advice.
There you go.
Compared to the older generations. So again, some good data out of there. And of course, dog owners living outside of the capital cities are more likely to use a vet compared to those living in the capital cities.
There you Go. I think the if you're living outside of capital cities, your vet probably is your, you know, it's probably a member of the community. Like, vets are really trusted members of their, you know, in a lot of regional and rural towns. So that's, you know, I think it's a good thing. The vet, you know, shout out to the vets. They're doing a great job.
And, you know, owners of purebred dogs, 77%, are more likely than the owners of designer oodle dogs, 66%, to rely on their local vet for health advice.
Well, I mean, this leads into an important question, which is, okay, they rely on the vet for advice, but how often are they taking their dog to the vet?
Doctor vet, correct. And that's a great question, because guess what? The next question we asked them was question 8. How often, if at all, do you take your dog to the vet?
There we go. All right. This is what we want to hear.
So the 85%, which is the majority of dog owners, say they take their dog to their vet at least once a year.
That's good.
This includes almost 6 in 10 or 57% who take them once or twice a year, and close to 3 times a year was 28%. So interesting. Yes, it does drop off the more. So it starts at 85%, drops to 57% who those take them twice a year, and then 28% who take them 3 or more times a year.
Yeah, I feel like that, again, that sits with probably what I would expect, you know. But you've got some that are a bit more, you know, caring dog owners, you know, going a couple times a year. But, you know, most owners are probably, if the dog's healthy, you hope you only have to go once a year for your checkup, for your vaccinations. If they're going more than that, you know, hopefully they're not, you know, it could be because they're unwell. So I guess hopefully it's not
that. It's good. We're just churning out data here. There's not really much time for George's jokes and everything. But did you know that the designer of oodle owners were the ones that were more likely to visit and frequently visit their vets 3 or more times a year? It's interesting, because of that group that go more than 3 or more times a year, the oodle owners make up the majority of those.
Yeah, I guess, again, you know, they're thinking a bit more, you know, about the aesthetics of their dog, or a bit more concerned, you know.
Maybe the vet finds them easier to upsell. I mean, easier to encourage them.
Well, they also have, we know that they have higher income because of what we saw heard earlier. Maybe they can afford to go to the vet a bit more. But I think this last question is a good one, because I think, you know, it's about dogs in the digital age, and we've got a digital question, which I think is important, which, you know, talks about what are some of the things that you've done with your dog on the internet.
Interesting. This is good. But did you know that more than 2/3, so the equivalent of 5 million Australians, have uploaded an image of their dog on social media? I'm one of those.
Yeah. I'm shocked it's not higher. Only 2/3. Every owner has a whole camera reel full of their dog. I thought it'd be like 90%.
Well, you know, this survey, we didn't bias. You know, we made sure we covered every generation.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of the older generation wouldn't be doing posting of their...
Yeah, that's very, yeah, very true, very valid.
But you know what's even scarier, Nathan? Over 2.1 million Aussies, that's 27% of dog owners, have set up a social media account for their dog.
Oh my gosh. It's become like dog influencers. It is the new craze. 1 in 4 dogs have an account. Have a social media account. Wow. Probably they have more followers than us.
Well, and as I said before, the baby boomers, people like me, have only 45% do any online, whereas the Gen Zs, the millennials, are at 82%. They're the biggest users of uploading images of their dogs online. And of course, those living in capital cities are more likely than the others. And dog owners with designer oodles, of course, are most likely to both upload images of their dogs online, 82%.
Yeah, that's... Again, it's the designer look. It's all about, you know, how it looks on Instagram, how it looks on the grid. You can get all of that. It's about the looks. Makes sense as well. There you go.
And let's finish off with some other fun stuff. You know, while most, you know, while much loved, Aussie dog owners do admit that some of their dogs have caused some havoc around the house. You know, like they've coming inside wet and muddy and shaking dry. That's 49% of them. 30% said they've eaten socks.
That does not surprise me either. If I leave a sock out, I it's gone. I'm never seeing it again.
25% said they chew holes in shoes. Yes, the shoes are always. 23% destroying or breaking furniture. And this is one of my dog's favorites. They bring in, don't they, when they bring in this, been hiding a bone or a rotten piece of bone somewhere, and they bring it in when you bring a guest to the house.
Yeah, it's like a present.
22%. But you know what's even scarier? This is happens too, is that despite all these transgressions we might be seeing here and hearing, many dogs are treated like family members and allowed to sleep under the covers of the bed. 42% allow their dogs to sleep under the covers.
Under the covers. You know, we know a lot that sleep, you know, on the top of the bed, under the covers in the bed.
Wow.
And 19% have ridden shotgun in the car. Do you know, explain to all the listeners what shotgun in the car is.
Oh, I mean, they're riding in the front seat, which actually, you know, not to burst any bubbles here, is actually illegal. You know, you're not actually allowed a dog in the front seat of the car, but it's not stopping anyone. 19% of people.
Yeah. And other family, and this is what I love about it, not only have they ridden shotgun in the car, but the other family members had to sit in the
back. They know the pecking order in the house.
And then we had 13% that said they actually allow their dog to eat at the table with them and have their own setting. This is crazy.
Well, it just shows, yeah, the dogs are like members of the family. And that's the thing, that's the biggest thing I'm taking away from this. They really are, you know, as you know, a family member.
Well, you know, 47% of the people that were surveyed were 47 of purebred owners said they were more likely to take their dog with them on a holiday. So they sit at the highest. They'll take them with them on a holiday. Not only do they set the table and leave them in the bed, they come on a holiday with us.
Amazing. I love it. You love to see it. This is great. Dogs in the digital age.
Totally. And then, you know, if people want a copy of this Dogs in the Digital Age booklet, I'm happy to send one out to them. We got copies printed and made them available to some of our customers. So if they want to reach out. Yeah, so I don't know how people will take to this pod of Dogs in the Digital Age, but, you know, I thought this way we can at least give them some.
I think it's fascinating. I think, you know, as a dog owner, you'll get an insight into, you know, the behaviors of the rest of the population. So hopefully all the listeners and our dog owners and dog breeders found it fascinating, because we definitely did.
It was. So let's do a bit of a prize too and a shout out as well. Have you got
100%.
I'm happy. Let's offer a couple of full breed profile vouchers to anyone that's listening. They can email me, just first one to email me with an answer, but only one voucher per person. Let's think of the question. Come up with a question, Nathan, to see if they can answer this. I'm happy for you to come.
You want me to? All right, I'm gonna go for a question here. I'm gonna keep it fairly straightforward. But what was the number one reason that people chose their breed of dog over others? We listed out a lot. There were a few, but what was the number one reason for people choosing their dog? I will email george@orivet.com with your answer to that question. First one to email obviously gets the full breed profile. And yeah, I thought, George, what a great report.
And maybe some feedback on what people want to listen to and hear next on the podcast. Feel free to email Nathan with any ideas.
You can email me, nathan@rightpaw.com.au. We've already had some great insights from some of our listeners that have given us some great topics. So anything you want to listen to or hear, send it through. Well, thanks, George. Thanks for being our statistician. You're like Anthony Green on the ABC.
Right. Well, stats. It's a lot of stats. Data doesn't lie, does it? No. So It was different. I couldn't sort of be myself because all I kept on reading out was data.
Oh, I thought it was good. I still got a bit of, I got a bit of George in there. George the statistician. Love it. Well, thanks all of our listeners.
Thanks to everyone. Please, thanks Nathan for listening to all the stats and data, and I might send you a copy as well. I can even send you the whole presentation.
Oh, please. Please. No, it sounds great. And yeah, to all of our listeners, thanks again for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Bark. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the podcast. You can visit rightpaw.com.au for your all-in-one place to find responsible, verified breeders. And you can visit orivet.com.au for all your pet genetic testing needs. Remember to stay positive, and we'll see you in the next episode.